Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This meeting is being recorded.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The eagle-eyed of you out there will notice that it is not Dave hosting this week. It is just Alan and Matt. Alan, how are you getting on?
No, good. Sort of finally recovered from the heartbreak of France. And, you know, obviously sad to not have Dave here, but there's some essential work that needs to be done. And he's in Ankara getting it sorted.
Yeah, so a couple of procedures. He's having his hair plugs put in Turkey. And then on the way back, he's stopping in at his old pals in Switzerland to get his turkey neck a wee bit of a touch up. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I think both part of the same company, so it was a bit of a 2-for-1 job. So getting the full aesthetics done to make himself look beautiful.
Fair play, gets around that guy. Just as a reminder for all the listeners, the people who haven't tuned in yet, you can follow us in a variety of ways on Instagram. That is thistle_rugby_pod. Twitter, Thistle Rugby Pod is the handle. You can send us an email with thistlerugby@gmail.com and check us out on Substack. Sort of ramblings there, Thistle Rugby Podcast, it should come up. So this week, obviously, we've got Italy to look forward to, the big sort of must-win game, all roads lead to Rome. So we'll sort of be discussing that. Gregor Townsend named his team today. But there's a bit of news that we can sort of focus on firstly, a bit of signing news from both the pro clubs, I suppose. Firstly, it was announced yesterday that Magnus Bradbury is going to be joining Bristol at the end of the season. We'd been sort of told, we'd heard on the rumour mill that he was going to be heading south, but Bristol seems to be a bit of a surprise name. Alan, what do you make of that move?
Well, there's sort of the two rumours regarding two separate Edinburgh back row players. So obviously it was Bradbury to Saracens was what we wish were leaked. And then the other one that came out was potentially Bill Matter to Bristol. So what seems to have happened is either, you know, the Matter, both rumours were complete bullshit and actually, or potentially the rumours have been sort of crossed over. But obviously Bradbury's now moved to Bristol. And I don't know, I guess I know Bradbury's had a nice run of form sort of earlier this season, but I think given the strength and depth at Edinburgh and some of the form, especially in the game last week from people like Muncaster and Boyle, it doesn't really feel like Bradbury leaving is too big an issue for them.
Yeah, and it seems that even this season, although he's been playing very well, he hasn't actually played that often, because Blair has rotated the team so much. And that, as you said, the likes of Muncaster, Boyle, even Kunavula have come in and done a very good job. So I suppose it's a shame that he's maybe had a couple of seasons where he's not played so well. And this is the first season in a while that he's back to his form. and then he's leaving all of a sudden. But obviously it's a pretty chock-a-block set of back rows they've got there. So I kind of get it. And ultimately I think with these guys, they've got short careers. If they've got a chance to go to the Premiership, earn a bit more cash, expand their horizons, then, you know, fair play to them.
No, definitely. And I guess, you know, I know Bristol haven't been particularly firing this year, but ultimately they should have been in the Premiership final last year, and they have the money that they are going to be competing in that sort of top four in the Premiership over the next 3 or 4 years. So I think in terms of his development, you know, it's not like he's going to a Worcester and he's going to be sort of fighting at the bottom. You would think that over the next 3 years, he is going to be operating in a team that's going to be at the top of the league and is going to be fighting for honours both domestically and in Europe.
I think it's quite good for our Substack, because in the Scots abroad section, it's often a bit of a struggle to have a Scottish player in the Bristol team. So quite good news as well. The other signing news is Rory Dart being signed to an SRU special undisclosed long-term contract. I mean, obviously that's just incredible news for a guy who's had an amazing start to his pro rugby career.
Yeah, and I guess, so he only shifted across basically about 12 months ago, so it was him and Ali Miller together shifted across to Glasgow. And, you know, I think there was sort of a few glimmerings of what he could bring at sort of the back end of last season. And I mean, it's been a pretty incredible rise through sort of Glasgow and now to Scotland, where I think if Jamie Ritchie had been fit, I think it would have been potentially a tough decision for Tooney, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think we talked about it last week. There were a few people sort of reacting to the news on Twitter this week, saying what a failure that the Darge saga had been on the behalf of Edinburgh. What do you make of that? Do you think there was a sort of failure to recognise his talent?
I don't know. I think ultimately it's incredibly difficult when you just have that strength of back row player at Edinburgh. And ultimately, you know, Rory Darge did have a few moments in the Edinburgh team. And if I'm honest, I didn't call it that he would have such a dramatic rise over the last sort of 6 months. I actually, for a period of time, maybe sort of 12, 18 months ago, thought that Connor Boyle might be the one of those two who made the sort of step up. So I think ultimately it's more a product of just the competition that was at Edinburgh versus what's at Glasgow. And ultimately it's great that to have hopefully Watson and Darge both starting. It was never going to work with both of them playing at Edinburgh, just given how high quality both of them are. So I actually think ultimately there was very little Edinburgh could have done. And actually I think for both clubs and Scotland as a whole, it's definitely the best outcome.
Yeah, I think it's, to my mind, it's more of a function of the fact there's only two pro teams, because I think you'd be hard pushed to say any of the guys playing for Edinburgh in his stead were miles behind him. Like, you know, we kind of forget about even Luke Crosby, who's always been one of Edinburgh's better players. Kunavula's done a good job. And then I agree with you. It seems as if Connor Boyle was the one that had, you know, arguably more potential for a while than Darge. So I think it's a failure of having two clubs rather than Cockerell missing out on a talent.
Yeah, and I sort of thinking back to 12 months ago, I don't particularly remember like a lot of Edinburgh fans being explicitly upset about Darge moving across the MA, right? You know, there has been a few moments where players have potentially sort of shifted from one to the other, and actually fans have been quite sour about it. But actually with Darge, I felt most Edinburgh fans sort of felt like, yes, given the resources that Edinburgh have, it actually makes a lot of sense, right?
There's still something about Darge when they released that video of him signing the new contract. There's nothing behind the eyes. there's, you know, he's seen some stuff. Slash, he's like a cold-blooded killer, that guy.
Sort of different life, might be like Michael Fassbender in Shame, maybe.
That's quite a kind of implication to make, I think.
Yeah, can we cut that out, actually?
Well, we can't, because this is the one and done.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, it is. All right.
Anyway, let's move on from Michael Fassbender and Shame. Go and look up that film if you want. But moving on from the news, I think that's everything. Let's get into the meat and drink, as Dave would call it, which is obviously Scotland against Italy this weekend in Rome. Scotland on the back of two disappointing losses, and made a few changes in what is, you know, ultimately a must-win game. Let's just give you the starting 15 in the front row. A bit of change. We've got George Turner coming in for Stuart McInally, but Pierre Schoeman and Xander Fagerson return their places. All the same in the second row, Sam Skinner and Grant Gilchrist. Rory Darge retains his place, but Hamish Watson comes in for Haining, and Matt Fagerson recovers from injuries to take the place of Magnus Bradbury. In the backs, there's a couple of changes. Price and Russell, as is, but Sam Johnson back in at 12. Chris Harris remains at 13. Darcy Graham and Hogg in the back three, and Kyle Steyn comes in for the suspended Doohan van der Merwe. Alan, what was your sort of first take of that squad when you sort of first saw it released on Twitter?
Strong. I think in that pack, I would say that I think generally feel like Turner's probably played slightly above Rambo in the sort of opening three games of the Six Nations. I think actually that's potentially Scotland's strongest front row. Nice to see sort of Watson and Darjean together. I think whilst obviously it's a bit of a deficiency in the lineout, I think ultimately it just brings you so much from a ruck standpoint. Obviously Matt Ferguson's coming in, who, given his sort of form, was potentially Scotland's best forward across the first two matches. And then obviously said gutting to see Doohan come out, but ultimately I think Kyle Steyn, especially against a team like Italy, I think is a pretty strong replacement. So no, I actually felt when the team came out, I probably felt slightly more confident than I had been over the last sort of 10 days.
And we were sort of talking about it before we started recording, but there were a few people saying that Townsend should roll the dice slightly and maybe start a Hastings or a Kinghorn ahead of Russell, but it feels as if this is a team to win the game. There's not really much room for experimentation. It's about the here and now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we think back to sort of the Six Nations in 2021, and I think as we were sort of coming into this match, we had obviously beaten England away, and we'd had this obviously slight loss to Wales, and I think we came into this match with a lot of confidence, probably in maybe feeling sort of the strongest in terms of our ability to put Italy away than I can remember over the course of sort of our sort of fandom of Scottish rugby, and ultimately went a little bit YOLO. You know, I mean, I think looking back, the fact that we had sort of Hogg at 10, we sort of shipped Hugh Jones into the team out as a centre, which, you know, he hadn't been in for a while. Sean Maitland was moved to fullback. You had Scott Steele at 9, Dave Cherry, you know, starting in the front row. It was a team that felt like, you know, we know that even with these rotations and maybe second choice players, we have enough to put away an Italian team. And you sort of compare it to where we're at now, and it really feels like the team that we put out is our strongest team, given who's available. And we really need a win. The momentum has completely gone in the wrong direction. And if we are going to have a chance of putting away Ireland in Dublin, we need to have a good win against Italy and start kind of getting back on that road.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned the fact that Doohan's missing. What did you make of his ban? If people haven't seen the incident, they can go on our Twitter and find it. But it maybe seems like a bit of a harsh punishment.
I think when you compare it to some other actions. So, for example, I can't remember, but someone was referencing the Bristol winger who essentially put like a shoulder into someone's head upright in the tackle, and they got 4 weeks reduced to three. And then you compare it to the fact that Doohan for that action gets 3 weeks. It just feels like anyone who watches rugby can see that those actions are not the same level. And the fact that they're both getting 3 weeks just feels like a bit unjust. I think when I look at sort of Doohan's actions, I can see how you get to a red card. But I think it's almost more sort of hitting with the wrist. And I actually think when you look at it in real time, I'm not sure it's actually with much force as well. Appreciate he's a big guy, and I imagine at any force, Doohan hitting you with his wrist is quite horrible. But I don't think it would be classified as being sort of like with force.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of got me thinking that if this is the way the game is going, which look, if they want to stop concussions and they're worried about that side of things, then a hand off to the face is the next thing that will probably be banned. Surely that to me doesn't really make much sense, that you can effectively sort of put the heel of your palm into someone's face and you don't get punished for it.
Yeah, agreed. Imagine like a fully outreached Doohan palm with like all the power that comes with that is almost probably worse than what Doohan did to Kyle Steyn. At the weekend. And I agree. I think the two, going a little bit off track, but the two that I've always thought they might sort of do is removal of the handoff and then stopping players jumping in the air.
Yeah, I think jumping in the air is an interesting one, because I'm for keeping it, but there's so many incidents that arise from that.
I think fundamentally, once you're in the air, you're not in control. And it's if you're wanting to, and ultimately there's not been like a huge terrible injury off the back of it, so it's probably not motivated anyone to sort of do anything. But it feels like, you know, if you've got two of you challenging in the air, both incredibly high, and you both hit each other fairly, there is just ultimately a chance that you can land in quite terrible ways, right? For no fault on anyone. Slightly deviate, but no, I if it was me, I thought it would be either a yellow card or maybe like a one-week ban. So I was a bit surprised with the 3 week.
Yeah. But I suppose that's where we are at the moment. I mean, you touched on it, but what do you think Steyn will bring in Doohan's place?
Yeah, well, we talked about it a little bit sort of pre-Six Nations, and I think I was almost in the camp where I thought Kyle Steyn should start ahead of Darcy Graham. And I think, so retrospectively, given that Darcy Graham's potentially been Scotland's standout performer over the last three matches, that's a bit ridiculous. But I do think that whilst Kyle Steyn doesn't bring you some of the ultimate ability to beat the man that Doohan has, just given his strength and speed, Kyle Steyn is just an incredibly solid operator, maybe slightly stronger in defence and probably stronger under the high ball and on the kick chase. So yeah. I think you do lose quite a bit in attack without Doohan, but I actually do think also at the same time, Kyle Steyn can bring a few other qualities that Doohan doesn't have. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that Steyn doesn't have that freakish ability of Doohan, where, you know, when he gets the ball, he's going to break tackles. But then I think he probably makes up for that in terms of work rate and general rugby brain. And look, it's only Italy, right? Which is famous last words. But I even think, you know, we were talking about him potentially playing in the England game, because I think he would actually, I think he would suit Test rugby quite well. So, look, he's in my fantasy team. He's there, so I'm hoping he racks up some points, gets some tries. I'm putting my faith in him.
Before Doohan got banned, if I had said to you post the France match that you had to drop one of Doohan or Darcy Graham, who would it be?
Yeah, it's a very good question, actually. Thing is, Doohan has been so far, I still think, as we talked about the other week, he doesn't get given the ball enough, but he is this incredible get-out weapon who, when he gets going, is probably more effective than Darcy Graham. But Darcy Graham's been top of his game so far that I'd probably drop Doohan, I think.
No, I agree. And then I think the follow-up question is, if you had to drop one of Doohan, Darcy, or Hogg, who would it be?
I mean, they play different positions, right?
No, I get it. But I was just thinking around sort of the back three, and I'm a little bit sort of to the idea that I think actually of those back three, Hogg's potentially been the poorest over the first three matches.
I think it would be between him and Doohan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pretty confident that Steyn is going to do a good enough job. I like him a lot. I think he's a good option to have. And I think it's his first Six Nations start. So yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how it goes, but I'm pretty confident in what he brings.
Probably going to play the full 80 as well, given the fact that it's Fellacott, Hastings, and Tupelotu on the bench. I imagine unless there's injuries, that they're not going to sort of change that back three.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what other sort of permutations there might be, but actually that bench sort of decides it for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The other change in the back line is Sam Johnson coming in at 12. I mean, I suppose he played in that game, the one victory we've had so far against England, and I think did pretty well, but he's been consigned to playing for Glasgow in the weeks afterwards. What do you make of that change? And do you think he was maybe harshly dumped by Townsend?
Was that one of our mutual friends asked whether Sam Johnson was the glue that held the back line together, given the fact that he was in the England win and hadn't been a part of obviously the loss to Wales and France. And I think my view was that was a bit of correlation does not imply causation. And I'm not sure whether Sam Johnson being in that Wales match or that France match would have made a massive difference. I think ultimately the only reason that I would say that you would choose Johnson over Tuipulotu at the moment is potentially because him and Russell have played so much together and also probably won a lot of matches together, and whether they just feel like actually given that, especially that sort of 10, 12, 13, just even in the Wales and France match, just doesn't seem to be quite clicking. That actually, against an Italy team, let's have that combination of Russell, Johnson, and Harris, which over the last probably 3 or 4 years has been the combo that has seen us win those big matches, or at least sort of, especially sort of Russell and Johnson have won a lot of big matches together and seem to be sort of quite consistent. Let's bring him back. Let's bring them back in, and hopefully take down sort of an easy win against the Italians. Because I don't think there's anything in Sam Johnson's URC form that means that he should have usurped Tua Peloto over the last sort of couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think he's an incredibly solid option. I don't think he's going to, you know, make massive mistakes. But it does seem as if, we go back to Redpath being the great white hope, but it does seem that the other options that Townsend has tried 12 to try and play that second playmaker option. I think back to Matt Scott against South Africa, who hasn't had a look in since. They've not quite worked. So I wonder if it's a return to stability. But then I kind of think that, you know, that's the kind of, that Johnson Harris is the midfield that fans have complained about in terms of not getting the attack going. So I think they've got quite a lot to prove, actually, in terms of, you know, the sort of the expansive style that, or getting the best out of that backline, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting. I completely forgotten that Matt Scott had started that South Africa game. And actually, I think sort of looking back at some of the selections now over the last sort of 4 weeks, now retrospectively makes that selection feel a little bit stranger.
Mm.
The fact that they clearly saw Matt Scott was having a lot of good form with Leicester, then sort of threw him into playing the world champions in what was a pretty tough match. And then he seems to have been a little bit sort of thrown back out to sea.
Yeah, it feels as if that midfield conundrum is not quite sorted, but I'm pretty confident that Russell, Johnson, Harris is, you know, enough to deal with the Italian threat and make things happen. The other changes are on the bench. I think most interesting ones are Vellacott and Hastings coming in. Quite a big switch up from White and Kinghorn. What have you made of those selections?
Sort of one way, I feel a little bit bad for Ben White, because I actually think that he's performed relatively well when he's come on for Ali Price. At the same time, I think Ben Vellacott's form has been so strong for Edinburgh, not just in the last game against sort of Connacht, but just more generally across the season, that I think he absolutely does deserve to be on the bench. So, you know, super, super keen to see how he does. And then I sort of, with Adam Hastings, I'm never quite clear how well he's playing for Gloucester. If I'm honest, I just don't have the time or the inclination to sit down and watch a full Gloucester match. But it does seem like he is playing relatively well in a team that is ultimately fighting for sort of top four Premiership rugby. And I know Tooney made some remarks about how he's sort of been playing quite well over the last few weeks and sort of earned his sort of call back into the squad. So I think I am glad to see Adam Hastings sort of back in that team. Because I actually, you know, think back to sort of 2 years ago when, you know, Russell was kicked out. You know, I actually think Hastings had a relatively strong Six Nations across those sort of three matches, especially that sort of home match against France. So, no, I think glad to see him in, and I think hopefully it'd be good to see him get at least sort of 20-25 minutes off the bench against Italy.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, the Hastings signing, considering when he joined Gloucester, you know, at the back of last season, they were towards the bottom of the league and they are now pushing for the playoffs. And not to say that he's the big difference, but they didn't really make that many big signings. So I think it's a mix of like very good coaching, and he has actually come in and offered a level of stability. But then I think the way that Gloucester play is quite conservative, quite forward orientated. So it doesn't necessarily suit Hastings' style, but fair play to him. He's adapted to that and done very well. I mean, what are you expecting from the match on Saturday? I mean, on paper, Scotland should be clear favourites, and this should not be too difficult a game. But we know that that's not always the case. So are you expecting any difficulties for this Scotland team?
If I'm honest, I am. I think we sometimes sort of we get a little bit blurred by sort of the recent history where Scotland have had a much easier time against Italy, and actually, especially that sort of 2010 to probably sort of 2016, 2017 period, you know, especially away, we lost away. We lost more than we won, right? And I think
we haven't lost to them since 2015.
Yes.
And that was at Murrayfield.
Then we lost 2010, 2012, and 2014, if I remember correctly.
That sounds about right.
And I think,
that's,
you know,
that's 7 years of beating them home and away consistently.
No, I agree. But then I think if you sort of even look back to the 2018 match, was we won by sort of 2 points. And there was a few sort of tight matches sort of in between then. I think 2014 was that the Dunkey Ware drop goal, which was a great moment, to be fair. But I think if you actually sort of look at sort of the overall context of, you know, we've had a very solid run. We, in terms of the position of both teams, the Italian team is young. They coming off that Ireland game, we're actually, they probably feel quite aggrieved at what happened in terms of the fact that, you know, they ended up going down to 13 men. And actually, even though they lost by sort of, 40 points, there was actually moments where I think they actually played okay, like quite nice rugby. Mm. They're at home. You've got a Scotland team that has struggled to find a lot of form over the first three matches. I think if they're Italy, you know, this is, again, not that it's probably too different to most years, but at home, four games in, Scotland team not firing, them feeling a bit aggrieved at what's happened in the last match. I just feel like there is a lot there for them to feed off. And if it's a tight match, I feel like given what's happened to the sort of Scotland team, we might start to struggle.
We haven't lost to them away from home since 2012. So there's a hell of a record to be broken, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Lost 08, 2010, 2012, and then Dunkey Ware drop goal 2014. And then we lost at home and then been cruising since then. It's, you know, ultimately, I still think Scotland will win, but I think the chances of an Italy win are higher than a lot of Scotland fans are potentially giving them credit for.
I mean, what's the best outcome for Scotland in this game? Because, you know, say we win by 10, 12 points with close to our strongest team, have we learnt much more about where Scotland are heading?
I think your best outcome is bonus point win. Probably they get the fourth try just after halftime. And at around sort of 55 minutes, Finn's off, Hamish Watson's off. Finn gets man of the match. There's a camera on him. He's smiling. Everyone's having a great time. That is your like utopia of Saturday afternoon. And you sort of use that sort of form and momentum and sort of general sort of happiness. And you sort of take that into the Ireland match next Saturday.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You feel like Finn is I feel like I'm putting a lot of pressure on him. Like, there's going to be a lot of eyes on you. Finn sort of almost kind of dominating this match, because I feel like there's been a lot of talk over the last 2 weeks on him specifically.
I mean, I think he needs a big game. But I could almost see it, because the opposition isn't that high a standard, that the stuff he's been trying might come off, or at least he'll get a better platform, like an almost Racing-esque platform to try those things. I've made him a captain in my Guinness fantasy team, so I'm
interesting.
I'm pretty confident. Yeah, I'm pretty confident he's going to have a bit of a belter, because I think he's due a big performance, and I'm actually glad that Townsend has stuck with him, because I think you need to back your big players. The fact he's still one of the vice captains, alongside Grant Gilchrist, I think is quite interesting as well. I think that's what he probably needs at the moment to go out and do his best.
No, I completely agree. And I think, I was a bit worried that they might take him out for this match and put either sort of Kinghorn or Hastings in 10, but I actually think it's going to be good for him to just continue to get that sort of run of matches with Scotland. I appreciate that he's clearly got like a bit of a heavy workload with sort of playing for Racing, but I think if he can pull out a big match, I think it really does increase Scotland's chances of going over to Dublin and getting the win.
Do you think it was a bit harsh on Kinghorn being completely boosted out the 23?
There's obviously rumours around the reasons for why he's not in the 23, and I potentially feel like maybe it's not worth us speculating. For anyone interested, they can check out Craig Chalmers's actually generally quite punchy Twitter feed. But
it's quite an enjoyable Twitter feed to get stuck into, actually.
Yeah, no, 100%. Just feel like he's sort of like in his 50s, just chilling in the borders, just doesn't give a shit.
He's already pissed off the SRU as well, so he can just sort of say things with impunity.
Yeah, exactly. I do think if it is rugby related, then it's a bit harsh, because whilst obviously I don't think he had a fantastic game against France, I think he came into a bit of an impossible situation. And actually, to be fair to him, to then go to the damn health arena on Friday night and really sort of lead that Edinburgh team to an very sort of convincing win against a relatively strong Connacht team, I actually thought sort of mentally was quite impressive. So I feel bad for him if it's purely rugby related.
Yeah, we'll see what comes of that. Sorry to put you on the spot there. but I did it on purpose. So let's move on to predictions then. What have you got on your match point predictor for the various games, starting with Scotland?
So I've gone for a 27-22 win. I'm going for a 5-point win for Scotland.
Five. Okay.
I think it's going to be a little bit tighter than both kind of just feel like general sort of public discourse and also the bookies. But I do think that Scotland will end up in the end taking the win. And actually the weather looks like it's going to be dry, a bit overcast. So hopefully should get a few tries on both sides.
Bonus point win? 4 tries?
Yeah. 4 tries, 2 conversions, 1 pen. That's my shout.
I'm a bit more confident than you. But then I predicted we'd beat Wales by 12 points. So, I mean, what do I know? But I've gone Scotland by 16. I think Scotland have got... I think they've picked Phil Noy's team. They will not be complacent going into this match at all. And I think they need a big result. And I know that Italy would be targeting this game massively, but I think Scotland have got far too much quality. I think it'll be tight for 50, 60 minutes, and then I think Scotland will pull away.
No, a highly likely scenario. I think, say, what do you know? I was looking back to our predictions from last week where I said that I thought Edinburgh might lose and Glasgow might get the bonus point. You're like, Jesus Christ. Some of our takes in the pod are so bad.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of ways this match could play out. And I do think, you know, ultimately Price and Russell, maybe the two of them, are going to have a massive, massive impact on what that looks like. And I think if they really sort of take the game by the scruff of the neck, especially, and Price, for example, is really sort of nailed on the kicking and sort of sets that tempo, I think, we could end up with like a pretty sort of 60-20 point win.
Like the sound of that. What about the other two games?
Yeah, I'm... going for quite a tight France win. So going for France by 4. I think they will win, but I think ultimately I don't see them blowing Wales off the park in the Millennium Stadium, especially on sort of a Friday night. And I've gone for an England win by 3. I think England feel a little bit... I know they sort of had 2 wins, yeah, but there's just a little bit too much quality there. And I actually think that at Twickenham, England might just have the edge on that Irish team, especially with Porter and Kelleher sort of out as well.
Yeah, I had England by 3 and then I changed it to Ireland by 3 because I still think Ireland have got a bit too much, and I think that Sexton will have the beating of Smith at the end of the day. I think Wales-France will be close as well. But I've gone for France by 6, but I think Wales will make it a real dogfight. So hopefully we get some free Guinness at the end of it.
Very excited. I'm gonna be in Ireland next week, so it'll be a great sort of cash in a lot of my Guinness.
That was for was that the trip you booked where you thought we were gonna go and win the Grand Slam in Dublin?
I had orchestrated a situation where me, my other half and a child were going to Ireland over the same weekend, and if Scotland were going to win the Grand Slam, I was planning to leave both of them and go to the Grand Slam either solo or whoever I was with. But you know what? That's not happening. So I'm more likely going to be watching it from a rural pub just outside of Wicklow, about an hour south of Dublin, which should be quite nice. Going to assume I'm going to be the only Scotsman in the pub.
That does sound very nice. To be fair, I'd made a similar sort of commitment. I said to my other half that after the England game, we're going on holiday the weekend of the Ireland match. If Scotland are on course to the Grand Slam or even the Championship, the holiday's cancelled. I'm going to Ireland. I'm going to Dublin, even if I don't have a ticket, which was a really stupid thing to say.
Ultimately. What a great time that was, though. There was so much.
I know, it really was. I know. I took quite a lot of kind of perverse joy in saying this is my commitment to the team. But
that when we were traveling to Cardiff, just the amount of people talking about bets on Grand Slams, people chatting about if Scotland beat Wales, they're going to book their flights to Ireland because we've got the measure of France in Murrayfield. I mean, it was such a great time to be alive. And it's all the hope's gone. So,
what a shame.
Yeah. I think we're likely potentially going to be back Tuesday night with all three of us plus a special guest. So that could be...
Yeah, exactly. Very special guest. That's been a wee bit delayed, but I think previewing the Ireland game with hopefully a wee bit on the line should be good. So thanks very much for listening, guys. Hopefully a win at the weekend. Wee BP victory would be nice. People in Rome, enjoy yourselves. We'll be back soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.